Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Hunneke. This week's guest is Todd Van Hoos, President and CEO of the Farm Credit Council, who joins us to talk about the farm economy and changes in the farm credit system during his career. But first, here are this week's headlines. Congresswoman Angie Craig will be the new ranking member of the House Ag Committee. Craig defeated Congressman Jim Costa by 30 votes. She told reporters she has a good relationship with Chairman Glenn Thompson and that he needs to be prepared to negotiate a bipartisan farm bill. During her bid for the position, Craig said she would focus on working across the aisle while standing firm on Democratic values like protecting nutrition and conservation programs. A new water resources authorization bill is on its way to President Biden's desk. The bill passed the Senate by a 97-1 margin. It has a provision to increase funding for construction and upkeep on locks and dams. The bill would require 75% of annual payments for inland waterways projects to be paid by the U.S. Treasury General Fund, up from the current 65%. This legislation is typically passed by Congress every 2 years. It authorizes the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to carry out new transportation, flood mitigation, and ecosystem restoration projects. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve has cut its key interest rate again by a quarter point. According to the Wall Street Journal, officials plan to only make 2 rate reduction cuts next year. They believe inflation will still be a problem next year, possibly due to policies like tariffs and deportation of illegal immigrants from President-elect Trump. People may not have much lower rates for mortgages or other forms of borrowing. Stocks plunged after the announcement, and the major indexes all had their worst day in months. And finally, lawmakers were struggling this week to reach an agreement to keep the government funded that President-elect Donald Trump could support. Trump helped kill an agreement that congressional leaders had unveiled on Tuesday that included more than $30 billion for agricultural disaster aid and economic assistance. Lawmakers had until Friday to pass a bill that could avert a partial government shutdown. Todd Van Hoos is president and CEO of the Farm Credit Council and has spent a majority of his career at the organization. My colleague Lydia Johnson asked him about the biggest changes he's seen to the system during his career.
I've been really involved in D.C. and the farm credit system for almost 35 years now. And in that time, a lot has changed. People always ask, well, what's changed? And of course, technology, right? Everybody understands that. But that's not the biggest change. The most consistent thing I've really been a part of in my entire career with the farm credit system is that mission to serve rural communities and agriculture has been the central thing that we focused on the entire time. And people change and Congress changes and all kinds of situations, the economy changes, but that mission remains the same.
During your tenure, one of the biggest tools for farmers that's changed, or maybe not the biggest, but a large one would be crop insurance. I guess during your tenure how have you seen that change and that evolve?
In my career, crop insurance has gone from this sort of niche product, right, you know, rain and hail, essentially, to the primary safety net for agriculture. And from what I understand, I mean, I don't raise anything myself. From what I understand, that's been a very positive change for farmers, that dependability, that understanding what the risk band is, right? You can set those bands. And that's been an enormously powerful tool for farmers. And, you know, as somebody who's been involved in Congress this whole time, that's been a difficult transition, you know, going from the old programs to the new program, boosting crop insurance, securing enough funding for crop insurance has been a real challenge for the agricultural community. And then driving that education of how to use those tools in the most effective way out into the farm population, that's been another challenge. But I think it's gone pretty well. I think people would generally agree. Look, we can always make it a little better, right? Generally agree that crop insurance today is serving its purpose.
And another challenge that rural communities can see, farmers, agribusiness lenders across the board, is finding qualified workers. So how has the farm credit system worked to attract new talent to rural areas to fill that void?
We're really kind of fortunate in that regard because we attract a lot of people, really smart people who are attracted to the mission. And the things I've seen is if people have come and gone in the farm credit system, those that come and stay do it for the mission. And that's a very different ethos than really almost anything else. And, you know, there's lots of smart people. There's plenty of talent out there. But if you're going to work in the farm credit system for your career, you really are going to have to buy into, I'm here for a reason. And so I think that's been able not only to help us retain people across the farm credit system, but attract new entrants. And especially this younger generation seems to be more attracted to purpose, right, than simply compensation.
We'll be back with more from Todd Van Hoose right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. The farm economy has been on a downward trend in the last couple of years, yet there's still a lot of equity in farm country. My colleague Lydia Johnson asked Todd Van Hoose with the Farm Credit Council if he's concerned about the viability of his borrowers next year.
We are very concerned right now. We did a poll of all of our CEOs of all across the country of farm credit. And, you know, we asked, what are you looking at? What are you seeing? What's your projection for the future? And the short answer I got back from one CEO who's been around as long as I have was, it's not the 80s, but it's bad. And he's in a very row crop centric area, right? So you really have seen a downturn. And, you know, it's been a while since we've seen one this sudden. I mean, it's almost like it just turned a switch and we had a big decline. And some of the national numbers you see, I think, mask the true extent of the pain out there right now. Because at the time, all the row crop folks are really having a hard time, and the permanent planting folks, many of them having a hard time, you're seeing cattle hold up the whole market. And so when you see the big national, what's the projection for farm income this year, it's dropped a lot, but it's almost artificially high because of those cattle prices. And so we're seeing a lot of people struggle, and those struggles are, look, if you're a really good, solid operator, and you've been around 25 years, you own a lot of property, and you've got a lot of equity, this is one of those things where you just hunker down and you power through, right? If you're a young beginning and small farmer who may not have that equity base, may not have that long experience, have time to build this up, this is hitting you really hard. And so those are the people we're most worried about.
When we talk about your work here in Washington, earlier this fall, there was a really unique lobbying effort that involved lenders teaming up with farm groups to visit Capitol Hill offices. So can you kind of share the background of that effort, and what was the biggest take-home message that you and all the groups wanted to deliver to lawmakers there?
I think the prime takeaway from that was the power of all of agriculture when it speaks with a unified voice is still pretty good in Washington. And so that sort of universal industry fly-in that's included even lenders like us, even commercial bankers, all coming to Congress to say, listen, the situation has changed. The profitability outlook has changed. The cost structures have changed. The export outlook has changed. And we haven't had a new farm bill in almost 7 years.
And Todd, very soon you'll be retiring and handing leadership of the council to Christy Seifert. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges ahead for the future and some of the biggest opportunities ahead for your membership?
Most people think of Farm Credit as a lender. I tend to think of us as a farm organization as much as a lender, just because we're a co-op and we're owned by our customer farmers. Farmers sit on all of our boards. And so I think in terms not so much of what are the challenges of financial services, but what are really the challenges of agriculture? And as you start to think through that, I think the primary one is we're becoming more of a minority in this country in agriculture. And as impactful as we are on the economy, in terms of human beings, there are fewer of us involved in this. And that is having some impact on our political power. And so I think that's a real challenge for us going forward. How do we maintain that political power that's necessary to make sure that this industry continues to provide the backbone of the economy for our country, national security for our country? And so we can continue to sort of lead the world in food production. Because if we don't, nobody else really is capable of doing that.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion, but first, Lydia Johnson has a look at the yearly production capacity of renewable diesel plants in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The production capacity for renewable diesel in the U.S. has significantly increased in recent years, rising by over 3 billion gallons since 2021. While numerous new renewable diesel plants have been announced, the profitability of the industry has dropped due to production levels exceeding the demand limits set by the U.S. Renewable Fuel Standard. This oversupply, referred to as the RIN cliff, has raised concerns about the future of the renewable diesel boom. As you can see on this chart, renewable diesel production is expected to be 4.3 billion gallons in 2023, 5.1 billion gallons in 2024, and 5.2 billion gallons in 2025. These estimates show a more cautious outlook compared to previous forecasts because of less demand from industry and an uncertainty about the content included in the future Clean Fuels Production Tax Credit decision due by the end of the year. Looking ahead, there are significant announcements for new renewable diesel plants in the U.S. in 2027 and beyond, with a potential capacity of nearly 2.9 billion gallons. These additional plants could increase existing capacity by more than 50%. However, much of that could change depending on federal regulations and tax incentives. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, and this has been an interesting week, and as we tape this, a lot of other changes could happen. Lawmakers reached a deal on a bipartisan year-end bill with disaster and economic assistance for farmers, only to see it fall apart after two unelected billionaires and later President-elect Trump weighed in on social media. We're joined this week by John Weber with Monument Advocacy and Jessica Shulkin with the Russell Group. Jessica, I'd like to start with you first. You know, congressional leaders reached a deal on $10 billion worth of economic assistance for row crop producers. Why is this so important for the farm economy?
Well, the farm economy has really suffered in the past several years. I mean, I think everyone knows that input costs have gone up, commodity prices have gone down. It's USDA has projected that U.S. farmers are going to experience the steepest two-year decline in net farm income in history. We still don't have a permanent farm bill, and so farmers out there are really hurting. They've experienced billions of dollars in market losses, and we need to help sure do everything that we can to keep those people on the farm doing the jobs that they love. So it's really critical that we stay focused on this task.
And I'd like to get both of your guys' thoughts on the next question. Jessica, we'll start with you first. Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy helped kill legislation that congressional leaders had spent weeks negotiating. What does this tell you about the influence they're going to have with the new Congress and administration?
I don't think it's surprising at all that they came out against the legislation that we saw recently. It was so big, there was so much included, and their sole purpose at this point is to have a smaller and more streamlined government. The other thing is that, you know, Elon Musk, people listen to him. He's obviously, you know, the star of X. I think that his influence is going to continue, whether or not everything that he said yesterday was right about what was in the bill, but it was, no one was there really to contradict anything that he said, and his following and his audience really listen to what he says. And so I think moving forward, you know, Congress is going to have to make sure that they are having those conversations in advance of putting legislation out, so they're not caught off guard and we don't find ourselves in a situation like this again.
And John, your thoughts as well, sir.
Yeah, I think, you know, first and foremost, the frustrations that he reflected on X are nothing new. And I think something that Republican members themselves have been frustrated with for a long time about this process and this end of the year. You know, huge bills that are, you know, suddenly dropped on them when they always feel there's a little less input than they would like to have seen. The difference now is that there's just a much larger megaphone. And to Jessica's point, I think the key to this moving forward will be to learn from these lessons and how do you incorporate their thoughts and the administration's views going forward.
Should farmers be concerned about the possibility of cuts to farm programs as part of this DOGE initiative that Musk and Ramaswamy are leading?
You know, I think there's always risk in anything when they're looking for cuts across the board. You know, you go back to other, you know, major budget efforts in the past, and that certainly has been the case. I think the farm economy is in a tough place, and I think producers and, frankly, congressional leaders like Chairman Thompson and Ranking Member Bozeman have done an excellent job of communicating the fact that that is not an option if we want to grow food and fiber in this country. And, you know, I think there's one thing that's held true is every member that's talked to the president over the last 2 days has said that he, you know, is adamantly supporting producers and having their back. And at the end of the day, I think that carries the most weight. And you know, I think he truly believes in kind of domestic food security. And I think that's something that's going to carry a lot of weight with the DOGE as they're making tough decisions on budget.
We'll be right back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special. But it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Welcome back. One of the biggest questions at this moment for agriculture is when will a completed farm bill be passed? We asked both Jessica Shulkin and John Weber their thoughts on the issue.
I'm an optimist. I think that there is still going to be, you know, a lot of pressure to get a farm bill passed next year, even if, you know, it doesn't, even if everything that they have done to date, for whatever reason, doesn't end up happening by the end of this year. Look, I mean, rural America came out in droves for the president-elect. Over 75-80% is voted for him, and he understands that. He understands that these people are his constituency, and they're depending on him to support their livelihoods. And, you know, with Senator Bozeman and Chairman Thompson and two new ranking members, I think that they also fully understand the importance of this. And I think that you will see them probably from day one really try to get this across the finish line. Even if we were to get a lot of the financial pieces settled, I think before early in the year or late now, or if we get all this economic assistance done, there's still a lot of policy issues that folks need to have looked at, and farmers need the certainty of a five-year farm bill. You can't just lurch from a one-year farm bill to a one-year farm bill.
Chairman Thompson said yesterday he's aiming for Q1. I think the logistics of that, the outside logistics of that, become challenging depending on where are we at in terms of government funding, where we are at in terms of potentially a first reconciliation bill. But I think the framework is there and the motivation from him and his members are there. The top thing I kept hearing this week was, you know, we wouldn't be in a situation if we would have gotten a farm bill done. And I think that message is carrying through pretty strong through new members. They'll need a little bit of time for a new leadership and two new ranking members to staff up and get their voices heard in this as well. But I would expect the ambition to be pretty aggressive.
One last question for both of you guys before we end. Jessica, we'll start with you first again. I'd like to get both of your guys' thoughts on President-elect Trump's pick to lead the Department of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Do you think he will have any impact on food and ag policy?
I think he will try. I think it's important for people to keep in mind actually that what is under his purview versus what is under the purview of USDA. I think as I've had conversations, there's a lot of confusion out there around what he's actually going to be in charge of. Let's not forget USDA has all of the meat supply. USDA has all the commodity support programs. USDA is actually in charge of the federal feeding programs. He clearly will have a big HHS has the Food and Drug Administration, which is, you know, 80% of the food supply. So he is certainly going to have room to play in food safety and nutrition, but I think it will be more around the edges. I also think that the Ag Secretary nominee, Rollins, she was raised on a farm. She understands the importance of what our farmers do, and she has, you know, by all accounts, the ear of the president. And so I think that hopefully, you know, our farmers are going to be a little bit insulated from the strongest impacts of what RFK Jr. would like to do.
It's an open question right now, one that I think a lot of senators are trying to feel out in terms of their conversations. I think the insurance that we're hearing coming out a lot of these meetings is you know, at the end of the day, the president, farmers have the ear of the president when it comes to these issues and would have the ability to step in if he oversteps in their view into kind of food and farm policy. But, you know, I agree, it's an open question and I think the purview is pretty small. He also has just such a wide array of issues that he'd like to focus on. And I think the big question is, what is he going to focus on from the pharmaceutical side to the health side to the food side? It's tough to do so many of those things and so many of those initiatives. I think it's an open question of which one becomes its priority.
Well, there's certainly a lot of uncertainty moving forward with ag policy as we move into the new year. Jessica, John, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Lydia Johnson has a look at the current drought conditions in this week's Map It Out.
U.S. farmers and ranchers will be finishing up 2024 with abnormally dry conditions across much of the country. As you can see on this map, white represents normal conditions, yellow areas show abnormally dry areas, and increasing variations of orange through red represent higher levels of drought. States across the high plains that produce wheat, sorghum, and corn are in moderate, severe, and pockets of extreme drought as the winter season sets in. South Texas is facing increasing levels of drought, including a pocket of exceptional drought along the upper Rio Grande. Areas of the southeast, particularly in Georgia, where Hurricane Helene passed through earlier in the fall, are shaded in white, indicating no drought. NOAA scientists say a weak La Nina may develop before the winter season that could further influence temperatures, precipitation, and snow across the country. Experts say if the La Nina develops, southern regions of the U.S. could be drier than average, while the northern tier of the U.S. would be wetter than average. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Elevate your game and set your sights on Denver for the 2025 Commodity Classic. With technology that moves faster than fluctuating markets and information as important as a million-dollar rain, Commodity Classic is designed for growers of all kinds, where you'll broaden your horizons as you improve yield and ROI one bushel at a time. Take your operation to new heights and join us for Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at CommodityClassic.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks for joining us on this week's Newsmakers. We hope that you will tell your friends about our show and encourage them to sign up on www.agra-pulse.com. That's where you will also find the latest news on farm, food, and rural policy from our talented team of editors. And we hope you have a wonderful Christmas with friends and family. We'll bring you a special year in review episode next week, highlighting some of the most important ag policy moments from this year. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.